Now we turn to colonial America and the developments following the first awakening that swept the American colonies in the 1730s and 40s. This religious revival resulted from the powerful preaching of such religious figures as Cotton Mather, who wrote on the values of Puritan music making. Mather believed in the old way of singing, in which song leader calls out each line of a hymn tune as it is to be sung, with the congregation responding with their own heterophonic variations of that melody. This was the singing described by Huck Finn. Mather believed that regular singing was a form of prayer, and that the orderly singing of a sacred text by the whole congregation would be pleasing to God. As a result, a reform movement began around the 1720s, and hymns were published in books to protect them from changes made through oral transmission. Nevertheless, the old way persisted among some communities well into the 20th century. New England also saw the appearance of singing schools, which were taught in the evenings in any available space and typically lasted for 3 months. The singing master, who wished to organize such a school, advertised for paying pupils. Once a school was formed, the scholars persuaded other church members to follow their lead. Here is the meeting house in Shirley, Massachusetts, where doubtlessly singing schools met at one time. The meeting of the singing schools became social occasions, ones that allowed boys and girls to intermingle. It offered innocent and profitable recreation that would help young people do something useful during the long winter evenings. The first published singing school tune book was Urania, or a choice collection of psalm tunes, anthems, and hymns, by James Lyon. He was a recent graduate of the College of New Jersey, now known as Princeton University. By the 1760s, singing schools and regular singing were spreading music literacy and feeding interest in more elaborate sacred music. Widely regarded as the father of American choral music was William Billings, who was born in Boston in 1746. At the age of 14, the death of his father stopped Billings' formal training. He took up tanning and never received any training in music. According to a contemporary, who gives a very vivid account of Billings, he had one eye, a deformed arm, and a harsh voice. He was lame in one leg, and he was addicted to snuff. Despite these physical challenges, Billings married and had 6 children. Billings was self-taught as a musician, and by the age of 23, he was teaching singing school. His music reflected the vitality that had begun to flow into New England, a New England sacred music, as Puritan restrictions fell away, and music literacy spread and secular attitudes became more acceptable. The frontispiece for Billings' The New England Psalm Singer, published in Boston in 1770, was engraved by a friend of his, Paul Revere. It shows a picture of 7 singers singing a canonic composition, a composition in canon, seated around a table, and it evidently portrays the kind of social occasion in which this sacred work might have been performed. Billings died in poverty at age 53 and is buried somewhere in Boston Commons. If you go to Boston, you can read this plaque. We're not sure exactly where his grave resides. For a considerable time after his death, his music was almost completely neglected in the American musical mainstream. However, his compositions remained popular for a time in the rural areas of New England, which resisted the newer trends in sacred music. Moreover, a few of Billings' songs were carried southward and westward through America, and as a result, their appearance is in several shape note hymnals. Billings' The New England Psalm Singer includes one of the most exquisite short canons ever composed, and you have to look for it carefully because it's tucked into a little side of one of the pages.
When Jesus wept the falling tear, in mercy flowed beyond the bound. Jesus.